Okay, thank you, Martha. The title of this presentation is Failure to Rescue, a Potential Measure of School Nursing Practice, and I wanted to thank Dr. Dewey Bergen for her guidance and support and direction for this work. The work that I'll be talking about, this work, is work that I had done with Martha as a National Association of School Nurse Research intern in 2009. And just a quick, I think the acoustics are better over there, but please feel free to move over. You were getting two lectures for like one sitting, but is it a little better? just there's so few of us. Are any of you school nurses in the audience? Yes. Okay, great. It's always a pleasure to present this work to school nurses. But today, like, I think it's really special because I'm able to present it to people outside of school nursing. And if that applies to you as I go along and you work in the nursing profession or the healthcare profession, I think you can take some of these elements and think about how you might be able to apply it to your area of work. I think you'll see some commonalities. So I have no relationships to disclose. And the objectives of this session are first to identify what some of the key components of failure to rescue are. Are any of you familiar with that concept already? Okay. Martha, yes. I will go over what that is so that we're all on the same page, but just a quick up front, I think it's important to know that failure to rescue can be defined statistically, but it can also be defined conceptually as a measure of professional vigilance. So our second objective is really to identify these conceptual components of failure to rescue in school nursing practice. And lastly, the third objective is to share with you an initial characterization of school deaths and school rescues. As Martha had mentioned, we have widely varying student to school nurse ratios. And if you look up here, anybody from DC? Okay, well, you're way up there on the ruler. So you have about one school nurse to every 400 or so students, as opposed to Michigan down here. Anybody from Michigan? They have about one school nurse for every 4,000 or so nurses. So the question in terms of outcomes becomes, are children in DC with that really nice ratio healthier, meeting developmental milestones better, or performing better in school than children way down there in Michigan? And if so, is the school nurse in any way contributing to that better outcome? Without this information, it's really difficult to guide policymakers about what optimal student-to-school-nurse ratios would be. So what we see happening is many misunderstandings and many misperceptions about school nursing, both within the nursing profession and outside the nursing profession. And I'd like to kind of exemplify that, I'd like to share something that happened in Tennessee. Anybody from Tennessee? Are you familiar with this? Okay, excuse me. Okay, so in Tennessee, the school nurse ratio is 1,774 students to one nurse, one school nurse, and that ranks at about 39th in the United States. And a particular district in Tennessee was looking to increase funding for school nursing positions. And in response to this, a commentary was written in the local paper, and the commentary, or the two quotes at the bottom, there will be a significant increase in the number of students who claim sickness so they can go home and play video games or worse. And are kids getting so sick during the middle of the day that they're having to be rushed to the ER, or the ED? So what you see in those bottom two quotes is actually echoing what some other broader people feel, like the Hopkins health economist, that school nurses are really going to have to impact children to justify their salary, right? And that school nurses really don't save lives. So that's a little bit of the background, and you can see that the problem becomes very apparent that without information on whether or not school nurses make a difference on student outcomes, these misunderstandings and these misperceptions will continue. So one outcome measure, the one that I'm going to focus on today, that's used in acute care, is failure to rescue. So just to kind of get us on the same page, failure to rescue can be defined as the probability of dying given a complication. And that's the statistical formula underneath there. And a critical underlying assumption of failure to rescue is that if complications are identified quickly and problems are treated aggressively, lives would be saved. And failure to rescue is a really unique concept and a really unique measure because it reflects the resources that different institutions and their staffs have to bring a patient in acute care back from the edge of catastrophe. In other words, other outcome measures that are used in acute care, like mortality rates, have a lot to do with patient characteristics, like the age of the patient, their socioeconomic status, their gender. And what failure to rescue does is it minimizes those influences, those patient characteristics, and you get a clearer picture of hospital characteristics or institution characteristics, such as nurse-to-patient ratios. And in fact, when this measure was used in acute care, it was found that the odds of a patient dying from a complication increased by about 7% for every additional patient in a nurse's workload. So what this evidence tells us is that the nurse's ability to save a patient is really greatly impacted by the practice environment and the resources that are invested in nursing care. So if you think back to those really widely varying ratios that we have in school nursing practice, we began to wonder, does a higher student to school nurse ratio also make a difference when a life or death emergency happens at school? So this was the question that kind of guided our work. When there's a cardiac or respiratory arrest at school, does it make a difference whether or not a school nurse is present? But there were many challenges, and the work that I discussed in acute care, the failure to rescue work that was done there, really relied on large administrative data sets in order to come up with their findings. And as you may know, large data sets for school health are relatively non-existent, almost for any research question, let alone if you can imagine, you know, school deaths and school rescues. And I think maybe one of the reasons, too, is that there's just an underlying assumption that when you send your child to school in the morning, they're going to come home alive in the afternoon. So it's something we don't often think about as a society. Even if we did have a large data set, we would still have to deal with the small numbers issue. So there would still be challenges to consider in using this approach. So what could we do? We decided to take a look at the failure to rescue measure kind of like from a broader perspective and look at it conceptually and see if we could take some of the concepts that were identified in the literature and whether or not they applied to our practice as school nurses. And then finally, we also did take a look at school deaths and school rescues around the country. So in the literature, these are the components that are identified, and I should just backtrack a little bit and tell you a little bit about vigilance. I just love this concept. You know, vigilance is really what is central to nursing practice, and it involves being on watch for subtle signs and symptoms so that when a patient's status changes, one is alerted to to intervene in order to avert a problem. So failure to rescue in itself may really be thought of as a measure of professional vigilance because it captures what may happen when a nurse can't be vigilant for whatever reason. So if we think back to our widely varying ratios, and if you think back to Michigan having one school nurse for every 4,000 students, and if there was a cardiac or respiratory arrest in one of his or her buildings, the likelihood of that nurse being there when that happened would be by chance, perhaps, and the likelihood of that nurse being able to respond effectively in that critical 8 to 10 minute window of opportunity to resuscitate would be decreased. So what follows is just kind of an exploration of these concepts for school nursing practice. And again, if you're not a school nurse and you work in some other area, I really think that these concepts, again, really spread across our discipline. But for school nursing in particular, the first concept, anticipation of impending problems, we kind of pulled out these three things. Whether or not an authorized person was there to manage a life-threatening emergency, whether or not a medical emergency response plan was in place, and whether or not the school had an AED. So, and the literature tells us that in response to the first thing, whether or not an authorized person is there, 25% of schools have no school nurse, and 30% of school nurses are part-time. 37 states don't meet the recommended student-to-nurse ratio that Martha had presented earlier. And then the second one, the medical emergency response plan. If you're not familiar with that, what I'm referring to there is what's outlined by Hyzinski and endorsed, I think it's endorsed by the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm not sure, but this was from their literature. And it's very detailed and very thorough. And what was found was that a significant portion of schools that have a school nurse present for only a portion of the day do not have a medical emergency response plan, and they're actually referring to this specific plan. And lastly, in terms of AEDs, 68% of schools do not have an AED on campus. So these things here, that this list here, actually we could consider process measures. So if we wanted to perhaps look at whether or not the school nurse to student ratio made a difference in terms of having one of these things in place, that would be more of a process measure. The second component, or the second concept rather, that's part of professional vigilance is knowing when immediate action is necessary. This refers to a nurse's ability to recognize early and significant yet subtle signs and symptoms of a deteriorating health situation. And the following examples on this slide and the one that follows, what I want you to see is how a nurse's skill contrasts sharply with that of non-nurses. And each of these examples bear testimony to the fact that a nurse's, that professional vigilance that nurses have is grounded in education, knowledge, and experience. So you can see this example here where the school nurse was questioned by the principal. And again, these were just some media accounts of school deaths. And in the first example, the AED sat beside her body. And in the second one, she didn't know whether the student was breathing. The third component, or the third kind of concept that's within that professional vigilance idea, is mounting an effective response. And to gather this data, what we did was we used U.S. newspapers and we searched them from February of 2009 to March of 2010. And in this search, we identified 19 reports where CPR was warranted. Of those 19 reports, 15 of them, the gold and the blue there, identified school nurses and individuals trained by the school nurse as playing an instrumental role in initiating CPR or using the AED. And this was real interesting to me because I know two of the schools that I had worked at previously where we were getting AEDs for the very first time, there was this kind of underlying myth that the AED was going to be used on the visitors who came to the school, not the students. And this kind of goes against that somewhat. In the red part there, those are the school deaths. And those are four reports. In two of those reports, the school nurse was not present. So back to our original question. When there's a cardiac or a respiratory arrest at school, does it make a difference whether or not a school nurse is present? And certainly this initial analysis supports the position that schools that are equipped with AED, CPR-trained staff, and a school nurse are best able to respond to that critical 8 to 10 minute window that's needed for resuscitation. So not having a school nurse present for the entire school day is a significant barrier to the school's ability to respond to an emergency. And again, with all of this, this is really just the beginning, just to see where we might align with that failure to rescue definition, what might it look like in school nursing practice, and just to begin to explore this idea of school deaths and school rescues. So what are some future directions that we might begin to go into? I think multi-state comparisons are really a way for us to see if we take two states that have different ratios of students to school nurses, we'll better be able to see whether there's a difference or not. And we might want to think about using some of those process measures that I spoke about, you know, whether an AED is there, and we'd have to control for legislation issues that sometimes mandate AEDs in some states, or whether there's a medical emergency response plan in place. So that's one area to move into. And then 911 calls are another really interesting one, and Erin is going to discuss her research in terms of the frequency and the reason for 911 calls. And it would be nice to take what she's done and kind of look at that and compare that between states with different student to school nurse ratios. So I was at this is my first time at an APHA meeting, and I've just really enjoyed it so much. And I don't know if anybody went to this. It was the identification of potentially avoidable ED visits using claims data. Did anybody go to that? I just wanted to share that, so I'm kind of putting this in a little bit impromptu. But I think that when we begin thinking about outcomes, if we want to align ourselves really well with like what the AHRQ is doing, we really need to be using large administrative data sets. That's going to give us the power, that's going to give us the number, and it just gets really difficult with school nursing. But what I found out in this presentation was that there's a relatively new data set. It's called All Payers Claims Data. So whereas all of that failure to rescue work was done with Medicare claims data, now we have something where insured people, so we'll capture students, we'll capture families that we can't capture in Medicare data, and perhaps we can use some of that to see reasons why children are admitted to emergency departments. So I thought that was kind of something really interesting I learned. So thank you, and I'll pass it over to Erin.